This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here's how I remember it. Last couple days, even though it's not my school, I said the Gophers would win. I was all Gophers. And every time I listened to Henry Lake, Henry Lake was like, why are the Gophers even in the tournament? This is an embarrassment that they should not be in the tournament and that the Cardinals win by 30 and the Gophers don't have a chance at all. Henry, that's how my memory is reminding me. Does that seem accurate?
You are about to make me legitimately use the term that the President of the United States always uses. That's fake news.
Fake news, yes. Fake news, yes. Your Gophers, Henry Lake, they win. They win by 10. And as we talked at halftime about offensive success in three-point shooting, played out the whole game. They shot 50% from the field. They shot 41% threes. They made 11 threes. And, yes, it turned into a bit of a foul fest late. So that goosed up the score by maybe 6-8 points. But they had very few offensive games all season that looked like this one. This was a very impressive offensive game by Pitino's club.
Yeah, this was to me reminiscent of the game that they played at Williams Arena against Iowa. Remember that
yep.
game?
I mean, it right.
was both teams were. I mean, there was not a ton of defense that was being played in that particular game because I want to say both teams scored close to. It was right around like 80 points or so, or whatever. But this was a game in which I feel like it was so much balance. If you look at the way that the Gophers offensively were able to get buckets. But it all revolved around the star of the day, and that was Gabe Kelscher.
Yep.
You know, Gabe Kelscher, what he was able to do, not only in terms of what he was able to do from three-point land and what some of his teammates were able to do from three-point land, but it really set up the ability in the second half of Oturu and other guys in the paint to get easy looks.
Yeah, Kelscher makes 5 threes. He gets 24. The bench scores the same as us. Zip. McBrayer has 13, Coffey has 18, Oturu has 13, Murphy has 18. What surprised you, if anything, about the Cardinals?
Well, one of the things that just was not happening today, I thought, and I props and kudos to the Gophers defensively. The Gophers defensively have went into games, and whatever the game plan is when it comes to shutting down the opposing team's leading scorer, they've been able to do that at certain times throughout the year. They did a phenomenal job of taking away Carson Edwards when they played Purdue this season. And today, Jordan Wara, he was not able to do anything. I mean, late in that second half for Louisville, he was rarely in the game. And coming in Louisville, that was their guy. He didn't shoot the ball well. And he's been an efficient scorer for them this season. Not a superstar, not a guy that lights it up, but a guy that takes relatively good shots, and he's somebody that they can lean on. And he wasn't there today. The guy that was there for Louisville today was Enoch, but, I mean, when you're the Gophers and you're knocking down three upon three upon three, you can go in there and you can get some nice buckets, from one of your bench guys in the paint. But ultimately, when it's two versus three, it's not going to work out. The math just doesn't work.
So Bradley's taking on Michigan State. That game literally just started about 5 seconds ago. Michigan State, the heavy favorite. So the Gophers would play Michigan State for the second time. They were destroyed in East Lansing. This would be two games in 3 days when their starters went heavy minutes. Clearly, Stockman for the Gophers, if I had to rank players of import, he's no better than their sixth most important player, H. But when you're playing two games in 48 hours, and now you're playing a physical, a bigger team. Getting Stockman back would be very helpful if they have a realistic chance to pull off the upset against most likely Michigan State, you know, early Saturday afternoon.
And more so now because Jordan Murphy got dinged up today.
Yep.
You know, so we don't
expand on that a little bit because I was seeing it, but we're on the air. Just pick up on that a little bit.
Yeah. So there was a play in which he was trying to maneuver and make a play in the paint, and he ended up getting pushed to the ground, and I think that they called a foul on that specific play. But he came up gimpy. You know, I think it was Gabe who reached out. And you know, a lot of times, and I know that professional basketball players are a lot better about this, but you know how, like, when guys go to the floor after a hard fall, and in the professional ranks in the NBA, guys will be cognizant of the player being on the floor, and they'll allow the guy to kind of lay there or just kind of get up on their own terms when they want to try to help him up. And, you know, college kids a lot of times, they're like, hey, bud, you know, come on, let's go ahead and get up because, we're about to go to the sideline for a timeout or whatever. And I think he got up a little prematurely, and I think that he really, you know, had some issues with that back.
Yep. So in fact, afterwards, Adam's just telling me that he just is saying to reporters that they were back spasms and he's feeling better.
Yeah. Which and it seemed like that because, look, he came back into the game. He was able to do some things. He scored some baskets even after all of that. But you never know how that stuff's going to flare up.
Yeah. Well, here's –
you're
right.
Go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is I know you've had a chance to get to know Adam Carter a little bit. Adam, about 3 years ago, came into the building here, and he told us that he had fractured his back, that he had a back fracture, and we were worried how he was going to be, and that was like on a Thursday or Friday. Then we saw him on Monday, and I said, how's the back? Oh, back's fine. In fact, I played rec league hockey last night. So you might want to put Jordan Murphy in charge of Carter because nobody recovers from back ailments as quick as Adam Carter does.
Well, I'm just saying, but Carter's an elite athlete, so we don't have to worry about that. Like me, if you send me to a CrossFit a gym for 1 hour, man, I'm gonna be in traction forever.
What a name drop that was, CrossFit. I mean, come on, you're looking for the lifetime plug too. I mean, geez.
I'm not a CrossFit guy. That's something that Carter would do.
Yeah, Carter, would you like to give Jordan Murphy any advice at this point?
Well, just a little ice, you know. A couple beers at BW3s tonight, maybe smooth things over. I don't know, maybe the young man isn't old enough.
I think he is. Okay. I don't know. Do you think the club's going to go out having beers tonight? I really don't think that probably is going to be a part of what Richard Pitino.
Why not?
Is a part of, yeah.
What else are you going to do in Des Moines?
Yeah. Wow. How about you, Henry? Is it time for you to show your commitment and make the drive down to the Big D Saturday morning?
I'm just going to check in with Mike Max. You know, so I'm. We're
good
just,
strategy.
Look.
Excellent.
If somebody's got an extra pair of tickets, I'll gladly make the trip.
Yeah, and a jet too, by the way, a plane, plane that'll fly you down there. All right, H, I will be listening tonight for some of your analysis.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Henry Lake. He is great, and he's a great addition to the station. 9-1 each night. Adam Carter has an update right now. All right, let's get to a bunch of things. Now, I saw what you guys were just talking about off air, but can you expand on it a little bit? Because I was going to do it, and then I started doing other things. So,
There's a fun new viral game sweeping the nation.
Yeah.
The kids are all talking about it.
Oh, yeah. It's the power plays here on this show.
Quit talking. I'm talking. it's the Florida Man Google game, I guess, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. You go to the Google, the machine,
mm-hmm.
You type in Florida Man.
Yep.
And you put in your birthday.
Okay.
And the point being, so many odd things happen in Florida, usually involving a Florida man, that whatever comes up for your birthday is usually something spectacularly awful.
And yours was?
Mine was, I'd have to do it again. Some guy tried to dig a tunnel to... Florida man digs tunnel to try to rob a bank or something.
Mine was thrown pancake batter leads to battery charges for Florida man. And John's was really good and kind of dirty. It was Florida man defiles washing machine at Soapy's coin laundromat.
Jeez.
They're so good, though.
Florida man dig an underground tunnel in an attempt to rob a bank?
Okay, so I'm at it here. Do I go to Florida man Reddit?
No. So just type in Florida man and your birthday.
Yeah. Oh, and my birthday. I got it. Okay. Oh, that's gold. Florida man, May 29th.
And then the first headline that just says Florida man, whatever it says.
Okay. The 47 wildest Florida man headlines of 2015. So weird. Did I do this wrong? Because I literally just...
Grandpa. Somebody show Grandpa how to
do it. Hold on. Right here. Florida man, May 29th, right? You do it for great.
I think the issue is probably because so many people have been doing this. It's like...
It must be, because I just did Jen's.
Yeah.
Police. Florida man's murder was really elaborate suicide by balloon.
Here's one.
Yeah.
I'll give you a couple.
Thank you.
Florida man guilty of impersonating Saudi royal member.
Oh, that's great.
Florida man steals zoo animals.
I'd love to impersonate a Saudi royal.
All right. I don't know if I can say this.
What's your last deal? What's going to happen? Get you fired? Clean it up.
Can I really say it? That word?
I think you can.
I think just clean it up a little bit.
Okay,
I know the word that Brendan Kieran would use for it.
What would? I can't say that word.
Well,
either.
I guarantee I don't know that word.
Florida man puts something disgusting from his body in coworker's water.
Yeah, his penis.
No.
Comes out of there.
Oh.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. We got there. Mm. It is the best, though, is because there's just these long chains of them on Twitter.
Proud moment for me to have that on my birthday.
Well, yeah. And it's also the game you could play. Is it Florida or Wisconsin? I always love that game.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Very good. Forrest Gump sequel was halted. Did you guys see this?
No.
Eric Roth, the screenwriter, who won an Oscar 1994. For Forrest Gump. What were we saying, Forrest Gump? Overrated, underrated?
Properly rated.
Properly rated. I'm with you 100%. It is a great movie.
Lieutenant Dan.
How about the amazing work that he continues to do, by the way? Gary Sinise.
Yeah.
Just remarkable work. Literally, I turn this in. The script, all done. And it was all done the day before 9/11. He also co-wrote last year's remake of A Star is Born, as well as the curious case of Benjamin Button and the Horse Whisperer. I thought Benjamin Button was a pretty good movie. What did you guys think of that one? Carter, your look is like just on Benjamin Button, or did you like?
I don't know if I've seen it start to finish.
Lindsay? Benjamin Button?
I've not seen it.
Okay. I think it's worth it. Tom, Robert Zemeckis, and then the man I'm alluding to here, Eric Roth, got together on 9/11 to sort of commiserate about how life in America and how tragic it was, and we looked at each other and said, the movie has no meaning anymore in that sense. Ross said the film would have begun with the revelation that Forrest Jr., take a guess, what was going on with Forrest Jr. since you two did not see the story?
That he was gay.
That's a good one. That was at the top of mind. I'll say it joined the Doobie Brothers and was going on tour in the southern U.S.
Yeah. And was a part of a power play on an afternoon morning show where two men felt like they were upstage often by a young woman, eventually went to management and forced her out. No, that Forrest Jr. had AIDS, the same disease that Jenny. People wouldn't go to class with Forrest Jr.
Jenny had AIDS?
What?
Sorry. I thought it was cancer.
I thought it was cancer, too. Did I miss that whole plot line?
Really?
I also didn't know it was an abortion in Dirty Dancing, so.
Wow. You want to spoil anything else on your final day here? I mean, okay, thanks a lot. We had a funny sequence where they were desegregation busing to Florida at the same time. People were so angry about either the busing or the kids having to go to school with the kid who had AIDS. They also were going to have Forrest in the back of the O.J. Simpson Bronco. Had him as a ballroom dancer. He was really good. He could do ballroom dancing, eventually sort of charity kind thing. He danced with Princess Diana. So do you think like a year or two later, they should have said, okay, we're never going to forget 9/11. It has altered our life in a way that no one could have predicted. But we do go forward. We don't, let's play the cliche, we don't let the terrorists win, and let's go. Because don't you think, even by 2002, if they came out with Forrest Gump, people would have loved it?
But with no reference to 9/11, though?
They didn't reference every tragedy, did they?
No, but I mean, come on. If you're going to leave up, put all the historical stuff in, and then you just kind of leave out 9/11.
So do you have to rewrite it?
I would, yeah.
Right.
That close, yeah. I mean.
Right. Or would you say, no, don't do it? Because I think they could have done it. And I think you raise a very valid point about including that. Lindsay, what do you think? Just leave it off to the side, it just doesn't work? Or incorporate 9/11 and see if you can even come close to approximating the great show before?
Oh, gosh, I don't. To be honest, I don't remember as much about the first Forrest Gump because it's been years since I've seen it. I'd have to watch it again to see how that – but I know that the obviously the historical parts are such a big part of it. So it's like, are you doing a disservice by not including it? Could you – you know, because there are people who would be annoyed by that.
Right.
I kind of don't like the idea of a sequel at all.
You don't want it?
No, I think it's such a – that movie is such a standalone, and it was so monumental at the time it came out.
I wonder about other sequels who came as close as this to being made. I mean, where the script is all done, and an event like this changes it. Okay, a documentary that is generating a lot of conversation. We'll discuss when we come back. Don't forget Dara in about 10 minutes on CCO. Yeah, somebody's texting Forrest and Trump together. That would be gold, right? All right, so most of us remember this. It's May 2007, and a three-year-old, Madeline McCann, was reported missing.
You're not going to spoil this, are you? Because here's the thing. Before I talk about this,
okay.
I was talking about it with this caveat.
Okay.
That I'm watching this series, and I remember the case. But I don't really remember.
No, I'm not going to spoil it.
What happened?
Because
I'm doing everything in my power not to go to Google and Google it to find out.
Okay, I think this part you know. Madeline McCann was on a trip with her parents, and she went missing. I was just going to remind people that in May 2007
in Portugal,
and we're willing to do a trip to Portugal, right?
For sure,
Lindsay. Would you like to come on a trip? As a soon-to-be former WCCO radio employee and join maybe the four of us.
I could be a chaperone.
Oh.
I'm responsible.
Absolutely.
I like that.
I don't know. That's part of the
power
play.
That's a good chaperone.
That's part of the
Want the strict chaperone or the loosey-goosey chaperone?
Well, I think if it's stripped where the three of us are on, there's going to be plenty of loosey-goosey. Okay, so then you guys jump in because I have not started yet, but I plan on 100%, maybe even as soon as tonight, jumping into the doc.
It's a documentary just like many others of the time now. True crime following the reported abduction of this girl from this resort town.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Which I have, in case you want to ask.
And it's set very much like these podcasts we have nowadays, too, these true crime podcasts.
Yep.
And I'm watching the fifth episode right now, and it is just very well done. It's a very good examination of plenty of things, including society's penchant to
blame.
Well, not blame, but you know, we love you and then we hate you. Society will turn on someone in a matter of, in this case, you know, several days. Also, very reflective on the media. And I say that kind of loosely because a lot of the behavior of the media in this is focused on the tabloid media, especially in the UK, which I don't think the tabloids are even close to in comparison to in the US as compared to the UK. And how they look at this story, it's just very, and at the bottom line, there's this poor little girl who disappeared and nobody seems to know what's happened to her.
Yep. How about blame towards the parents?
Yeah, that's what it starts out. We're laying the groundwork as, okay, this is an abduction. Raises some questions about the parents, what they were doing at the time. They left the kids alone in their, essentially hotel room, a little more than that. It's kind of an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
they're with other people.
They're with
right?
several other people in their group, and they were describing how they all had children. They're all checking on children at various times. We've got the person who's lives in the area seems to be a great help to the family and to media at first, but then suddenly the focus is on him as a possible suspect because he's quote unquote strange and has strange behavior. And I find myself too, you're watching that. It's like, okay, here's a grown man who's living with his mother in this resort town. And he's very friendly talking to people there. It's like, whoa, we're so conditioned to, oh, what's this guy's story?
Yep.
And it's just kind of a reflection. It's a mirror of sorts and makes you think about, how we react to stories like this. And it plays out real time. And it's just very well done.
I will look for it. Because Lindsay, how far are you? One episode in? Or what did
Yeah,
you...
I'm one episode mm-hmm. in. And
yeah, one and two are intriguing. But then I think it's three or four where it's like, it has to do with dogs. I'll just say that.
Okay.
Where it's just like, wow, like holy moly, like.
And what's it called?
And it's captured on video.
Is it just
the
called
the disappearance of
Madeline McCann?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do this. Let's pause right here. Dara is in the house. It's 31 past 2 on WCCO.
And now it's time for some Twin Cities culinary talk with two foodies. One actually knows what they're talking about. The other just does it to be pretentious.
What is the soup du jour?
It's the soup of the day.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Bringing her expert opinion, it's Minneapolis St. Paul food critic, Dara.
All right, we've got plenty of material. Okay, how is it possible that you, Dara Moskowitz Drumdahl, are getting love from American Conservative Magazine?
I know, and it was very convenient because this goes on with our conversation last week. So I'll catch you up for anybody that was not listening and didn't record it last week.
They should.
We were talking. I know they ought to.
Horrible person if you're not.
Very often on this radio station, we're kind of talking about like that I am the most bleeding heart liberal and that whatever. And I don't ever think this is true. I think that I just stand on the side of ration. And one of the things that I have never understood is why I am not the most conservative, like with a big C, conservative person in the world when it comes to food. Because my basic feeling is that everything was better in Socrates/George Washington's time,
mm-hmm.
we should go back to...
You're dismissive of vegetarians.
I'm completely dismissive of vegetarians. I think that many of the quote-unquote advances that we have undergone since World War II, so, long before I was born, they're all terrible. They lead to bad soil health. They lead to a dead zone in the ocean, which then messes up our farmers and our food independence and food security. I think that we have made so many mistakes when it comes to pesticides, when it comes to leveraging farmers into paying for inputs, when it comes to, leveraging farmers into enormous farm machinery. I think that we have made huge mistakes putting our farmland under control of foreigners. I am so conservative when it comes to all these things, and yet somehow not wanting to eat pesticides, not wanting to wash all of our soil down the river into the ocean, like this puts me as a liberal. Well, lo and behold, American Conservative Magazine
published a story this week that has basically just summarized everything I've been fighting for 20 years. And this is now the conservative position. I almost fell over dead when I read this because it's like...
Next thing I know, you'll be speaking at CPAC.
Oh, give me some of that sweet conservative money. And then I summarize this. I put this story out there. All of a sudden, American conservative, all these conservatives are like, we love you. You're the best. It's like, oh, I have been standing still in my truth for 20 years about this stuff. And suddenly I'm a conservative. Well, welcome to, bring it. Bring it all
so
on.
So are you saying they joined you
yes.
more than you joined them?
Oh, yeah. I've been saying, I grew up in.
You shape it. And they follow you.
No, I follow good logic and ethics, and it just took them 20 years. Because, of course, I knew nothing about agriculture. I came out from New York City. I was basically raised in a TV.
That big conservative hotbed of New York City.
My dad was a conservative Republican. But, I grew up knowing nothing about agriculture. The first time I ever set foot on a farm with any kind of sense, I was a functioning restaurant critic. And I remember going out right when, vaguely functioning restaurant critic. Anyway, functioning from the outside is a whole other story. But I went out to a farm. It was a guy who was going to be the first, I think, officially saying, the organic regulations only were established in 1997. And there were a whole bunch of hippies at the time who were just like, this is the way things are supposed to be. This is how we've always done it. Everybody in their newfangled inputs and everything, they should have to say that they're something else. Like, we're normal, and they brought it. But, of course, they had to come up with these organic regulations, and it was kind of inside out. Anyway, I went down to this farm. This guy was going to be, I think, the first organic certified chicken producer in the state. And that might have been, the first time I ever set foot on a farm. And he was just crusty, the old guy in a seed cap. You see me tumbling out of a car. You're not feeling very hopeful about that situation. And there were all of these hawks swinging around in the sky above his farm. And I was just standing there looking at this guy, and he's telling me various things. And so, of course, I interrupt because I get very interested in things. I was like, why is your farm have all of these hawks and all of these other farms around you just dead air? And
fair
he was
question.
Like, and he said, that's exactly what is going on. There is nothing to eat. Those are actually brown, they're effectively brown fields. They're just poisoned lands. And I'm just sitting here. This is how things are supposed to be, not poisoned. And so, my friends, 20 years later, American Conservative Magazine is coming and they agree with me. Because, the person who signed the Endangered Species Act, that'd be Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who started.
Richard Nixon on his policies compared to Donnie. They're not in sync in many, many ways.
And the person who started the conservation movement in this country, Teddy Roosevelt.
Yep.
Bull
moose.
Yeah, exactly. These are all conservative. We're conserving.
So
things.
I'm seeing this in 2025. It's President Pence's administration, and DARA is a part of it.
And I'm the Secretary of the Interior.
Yeah, agriculture.
How it wouldn't happen. I'd be like, I'm merging it all. It's going to be interior design and the interior. This is all one thing.
Well, I know you won't be in a room with them alone.
Stylish.
We know that.
Well, that's, that's his loss because I'm very entertaining.
All right. Well, thank you, George Will. Okay. Buying a pie from someone's back door.
Yeah, we haven't talked about, have we ever in all the years talked about Minnesota's quote-unquote cottage food laws?
No.
They're kind of groovy. I know, we never talk about this. So this is a thing that Minnesota has some very nice things built into our state constitution and state laws, and one of them is that you have the right to sell food out of your back door, or your front door, any door you've got, garage door, I imagine. So you can make pie, make pickles, make different things, and you don't need a commercial kitchen. You can just do it. You can bring your things to farmers markets. You can sell it to your book club, whatever it is. A state cannot mess with you until you have more than $18,000 a year in income. Then they can consider it a business and start regulating you. Anyway, this nice lady runs something called Heather's Pies. in St. Louis Park, and she's just so nice. I wrote a story about her this week for the website, mspmag.com, and she was part of the crew that started Nicollet Island Inn in 1981-82. Remember when Nicollet Island Inn was like
really big deal?
Yeah. So she
was, how is it now? How is it viewed?
It consistently continues to be a thing. It's a little expensive.
Nicollet Island
well
is
for,
such a beautiful. I mean, the island itself is so unique.
A lot. That's why I think they get away with being a little expensive because it's just so delightful to go there. You'd rather spend an extra buck for your Eggs Benedict.
Years ago when I lived down here, we'd bike over to Nicollet Island twice a week.
Yeah.
And just check it out. It's fun.
I see a lot of people, they do, you know, like they'll drive into the city, park somewhere around there. There's a ton of meter parking.
Yeah.
With their bikes, you know, then go for a nice bike ride up and down the river and then have, you know, finish things up at Nicollet Island Inn with a nice brunch. It's a great way to spend the weekend.
What's our guess in the ballpark of people who live on Nicollet Island?
Oh, it couldn't be more than a couple hundred.
Yeah.
It's a very small footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Nice place to live, though.
Yeah.
I see, you know, sometimes.
You want to buy me a house over there?
Yeah, I will buy you a house when Vice President Pence finally makes me Secretary of the Interior.
It's on the record.
That's got to pay some big bucks, I think. Anyway.
Under the table stuff for sure.
Oh, yeah. Get some of that sweet, what are you, when you're a for-profit education and then you also own some mercenary armies.
Graft and corruption, it sounds like.
I mean, I'm going to meet with Eric Prince on an island in the South Pacific, and he's going to be like, you're so clever. Here's a couple $1 million.
This doesn't sound
very
conservative.
Because I just got graft. It's just graft money. That's how this is all going to equal out.
So in other words, I could just sell, pies out of my front door. And just put it out there on the neighborhood thing or Facebook, whatever.
Yeah, so it's the coolest thing. Anyway, so this lady is just, she's putting out a sandwich board on the street. She lives in St. Louis Park. It's kind of, you know, just north of the Country Club neighborhood in Edina. And people are just popping in. She's a chatty Cathy. I love her very much. And she just makes these amazing, beautiful pies. She's got 4,000 Instagram followers because her pies are so cute.
I'm just going to say I know someone who's looking for various new ventures, who's a very good cook and is very good with crafts. Is this your new venture in Crystal, Lindsay? Just, you know, advertising and selling stuff out of your place.
John would say no to that.
Well, then you can
so
take
quickly.
It to a farmer's market. She's going to be at the East Isles Farmer's Market. That's the one in Uptown. That's starting June 13th. And it's just really neat. So she left the Nicollet Island Inn. She took care of her kids. She has some sick, she had a child with some health problems, and everybody knows how that is. It takes all your time.
Sure.
So she, you know, and now she's 20 odd years later, 30, 40 years later, coming back. She's doing her second career. She's doing it out of her house. Her work, her pies are gorgeous. And I just think it's just such a nice story. And I think everybody should go look at these cottage food laws. If you've been thinking like, oh, I kind of want to dip my toe into this, like you can. You can sell things at a farmer's market just out of your kitchen of your house. And it could be different things. And it's really neat.
Dara with us, 3-2 beer. Are we it? Are we literally the last place that has it?
Yeah, you know, City Pages put a story together. And I guess I hadn't been tracking the fact that all the other states have been killing off 3-2 beer. I tried to remember the last time I had a 3-2 beer, which of course is a lower alcohol beer. This was when I was first moved to Minneapolis. You couldn't get regular beer like south of 31st Street or something. And so all the bars down there were 3-2 bars. And you'd have a hard time drinking enough to get a buzz on before you just were quite logy and feeling very diluted, full of liquids. But apparently we're the last. And I can't really remember the last time I had a 3-2.
I don't either.
And I don't know why you would. It's like if you took a beer and then you dumped a La Croix in it. Or LaCroix in it.
Yeah.
That's what it tastes like. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's time for us to.
If you're a 3-2 lover, get out there and get one soon because I bet in 5 years it'll be gone.
All right. Adele's, the custard place, that's open. Sea Salt opening in about 10 days.
Minneapolis Farmers Market open.
Yep.
So that is
Minneapolis Farmers
happened.
Market is already open.
Yeah, yeah. You can, you know, I guess you can go there and get some fresh snow. But, you know, it's old snow, not even fresh. get some old snow. There's a couple of places, you know, people that have hoop houses, greenhouses that are doing their things. But those are my personal marker of spring is like Adele's. And then it's also sea salt. So we're right here. What is your personal, like the outdoor thing or the thing that's closed in the winter?
Well, it's golf for me, right? I'm trying to think of a food place, though.
Okay, so also the Dairy Queen near my house is going to open. But some people already have an open Dairy Queen, so that's
it. Yeah, I'm by a Dairy Queen that is open. See, I think, can I just comment on Adele's? I think Adele's is fine.
Whoa, sacrilege.
I just think it's
fine. Oh, no, I'm going to fall over. Adele's? Lindsay, come get me. I'm fainting
I've
over
never
here.
Had it. It's... I'm like the worst Minnesotan ever. But I get so many people love the hype. So
yes.
I would say mine is not necessarily like a place that opens. Mine is like the first boat ride. So until ice out, I don't.
Okay, the Dariette Drive-In is one for me. St. Paul. Oh, yeah. I don't know when they're opening. I called. I looked at all their social media. It's a mystery. It's going to be like when that little first crocus comes up in the yard. You know, you're like, oh, there it is.
Do you think there are people like rushing right now to get their patios open for this weekend?
Oh, without question. Oh, yeah. Without question. I've already got my first. Well, you know, a lot of people
decided to
do this kind of like easy access patio situation where you have garage doors or you have windows that open all the way. So St. Genevieve, Smack Shack, a bunch of places are just like locked and loaded. The minute it hits 60, all the windows open.
How are we with just drive-ins in this town?
They're dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
They do still exist. Dariette's, the beautiful... beautiful St. Paul institution. It's a hard way to use land, right? You only get a certain number of months out of the year, and it's hard to staff up. You know, I remember last year one of the Park Pavilion restaurants was really delayed because in this tight labor market they couldn't find enough people to fully staff themselves to open. It's a tough business model.
It is. Thank you, Dara.
Thank you.
Dara, Saturday, her regular gig, 11, off the menu. Your Landis Construction time check is 2:49. Time to call us for free home improvement estimates on windows and insulation. So we've talked about this the last few days. Lindsay is off to her next new adventures. She can expand on that a little bit. But we wanted to make sure to say some final words to someone who has been a large part of our lives for multiple years. So Mr. Carter, if you'd like to
It's just always tough to say goodbye. And I always say this, too. It's like, here I am again. I mean, what? Where do I sign up for this getting off this train?
It's the power play.
But it's just, and you lay it out much better than I do, but I just, someone who does the job very well, someone who is not afraid, the best part of, to me, of someone who is good on the radio is someone who is themselves and someone who is genuine and someone who isn't afraid to let people in on their life outside of the studio. And Lindsay exemplifies that. She is somebody who is absolutely not shy about sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly of everyday life. And it's something from a standpoint of somebody who is of a different generation, and I can't believe I did that. Those words just came out of my mouth. Like,
okay, Grandpa.
Somebody from an older generation.
I can't hear you over here.
It opens my eyes to seeing that, you know, the struggles of a younger person as opposed to things. But those are things that I actually absolutely went through but dealt with in different ways. And it opens my eyes to dealing with things in different ways. And just even before we came back on here, we're
talking about
we're all being very, very honest about our lives.
Yeah.
And that's something that you can't fake. And it's good to have that when the door shuts and the mics go on, that you trust the two other people in the room. That's what I'm going to say. It's trust. And that's, you know, you lose that and you hopefully the next person in that seat will be able to do that.
Well,
it's sorely missed.
That's it. Right. Cause that's a lot of what I was going to say, but I'm just going to say one word: authentic. Right. Because life, if it's authentic, is not perfect all time. It's not, hey, how's life? Fantastic. Or how are you? Kids are great. Or work, I love it. Or I love my wife, right? Now, let's hope we all have a lot of that, right? But we don't always have that, right? And we don't. And part of what has drawn me to Lindsay as a coworker, as a friend, as someone that and I'm sure we'll stay close with is she's just real about life. And in whatever odd way, Adam and I try to do that too. And it's what I'm drawn to in life because I just detest disingenuous. I detest superfluous. And even if it's on bad days, even if it's on the best days, if you're really who you are and you're true to that, then that's what you see. And my only wish for Lindsay is a very other simple word, happiness, right? Whether it's happiness today with John, whether it's happiness tomorrow, whether it's happiness in your next venture, because that is so much of life. And then when you're true to who you are, the happiness really matters.
Well, this makes me so uncomfortable. There's very few things in life that make me uncomfortable, but this is one of them. I have genuinely enjoyed coming in to this show and getting to know both of you better and kind of getting this platform to not only connect with what we're talking about, but to connect with listeners. You know, like I think back on my time here at CCO when I started, and I will say this all the time, starting here – calling my dad and telling him that I got this job was like the best moment of my life. But I moved in with John. I bought a house while I was here. I lost my father while I was here. All of those things that you guys were just my biggest cheerleaders. And the listeners, whether you liked me or not, always kept me on my toes. And I just genuinely appreciate what we were able to build here. And I don't think that this is goodbye by any means of the imagination. It's just a new chapter for me as I get our show out. Oh, my last time doing that. It's going to be a change. And I kind of knew when I left for St. Thomas that I needed to do a change. And I'm excited about what's next. But I totally go into what's next confident because of what I learned here. So I thank you both.
Keep following Lindsay. She's going to be part of your life in some way, professionally and personally. And we were lucky to have her on the show. Have a nice afternoon, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.